Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Monday, July 13th. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester and Drew Mentuck, both of Irish Illustrated. Where there is no off-season, guys, thanks to Notre Dame's recruiting efforts. Another July weekend passes and another crucial pledge to Notre Dame's 2027 recruiting efforts. In this case, TP, Mount Carmel four-star linebacker Roman Igwabike.
Yeah, I like him. I think an excellent fit for Notre Dame. Mount Carmel's a good fit for Notre Dame. A true Mike linebacker, you know, very physical. I think he shows his you watch him play. I think he shows his leadership on the field. He's directing guys. He's positioning guys. He knows what's going on with the defense. I think he's an excellent fit for Notre Dame. He's a winner. My only question was, I think you see, I don't know, Tim, how much you've seen him, but you see some plays that are outside the hash marks, and I'm not sure that he always has the range to get there, and that's why he's a Mike linebacker, very physical. That's the only question with him for me. And I obviously Notre Dame, they need linebackers, and I think he's a great fit for Notre Dame. So I like the catch. Let's see how he can improve his short space quickness.
Yeah, I like that he has good length. I mean, 6'3". He's already listed at 220, so that I think those type of things are promising. He's the number 123 overall player according to the composite too. So if right now they only have one linebacker in this class, so I think you want a guy who's got a, you know, pretty high ceiling and does well. It's kind of hard to, they used to get those classes where they would maybe take some of those three-star safeties like a Jack Kaiser and bring them in, and it's kind of hard to do that when you're only taking two and you're not, you know, picking up a four-man class and stuff like that at the position. So if they're only going to get one, obviously there's some other names that were out there that were maybe a little higher ranking even, but I think this is a good one to get.
Tim, I agreed with your thing about the outside the hash, but I'm wondering if there's the new type of three-down linebacker because he can get after the quarterback. I'm not saying he's like KVA getting after the quarterback or Snead even, but he gets after the quarterback pretty well.
No, it's not
coverage short. It's not short space quickness. It's violence and getting the quarterback. Yeah. So maybe that's different than coverage.
He really does. And I like him. And I like some of the stuff you see him doing zone coverage as well. It's not that he's immobile.
Right.
There's just a couple plays where why didn't he get there? And maybe it was a different read or what have you, but I love his physicality. And you know, he's a true Mike linebacker. And so you need to keep that in mind when you evaluate him.
And I think, again, I'm not comparing him to KVA, but KVA is a Mike linebacker that gets after the quarterback on the edge. You don't have KVA covering 12 yards downfield. It's almost like there's two ways of being a three down linebacker now. The old way, when you were Owusu Koramoah and you're just better than other people in space, and this way where you get after the quarterback. Yep. You know, like Jalen Smith, if he would have been used as a pass rusher, Tim Priester.
He wasn't used much as a pass rusher. Why was that, Tim?
I think we all know that one. We may have a question on that in the future, why he wasn't used as a pass rusher. There's a couple good questions about our past laments. I didn't include it in this one, Tim, but we'll make sure we get that in before the season starts. One lament Notre Dame fans do not have is where they are being ranked in the preseason. Tom Zwirler wrote a story on this. Drew Mentuck has talked about it. ESPN FPI as Notre Dame in Texas with the second best chance of winning the national title. That's at 13%. I'm sorry, playing for the national title at 13% and Ohio State at 17%. Drew, for the sake of comparison, last year it was Texas, Georgia, and Bama. I think at the end of the year, only Georgia proved capable of playing for a national title.
That is true. And for comparison too, I think Notre Dame is ranked third overall based on their actual like standings. But I think given Notre Dame's schedule and the likelihood that they're going to be in the playoffs, I'm sure that kind of influences that as well. But yeah, Notre Dame's right there. Miami's not terribly behind. I think they're eighth overall or seventh overall. So that's, you know, kind of fits with what we have been saying the whole time, that that's the toughest game on the schedule. But I mean, the FPI is always an interesting thing to look at and look at the rankings and efficiencies. But I think Notre Dame is about where we thought they were. And I think what's interesting too, to look at the advanced analytics, I think before or under maybe the end of the Brian Kelly era, maybe the advanced analytics would say Notre Dame isn't as good as maybe they were ranked in the national polls. And now I think we're starting to see where either matches or even the predictive analytics are saying Notre Dame's better than they are, like they were last year when they were third or fourth, even when they're 11th or 12th in the actual rankings.
I think the biggest difference among Notre Dame, Texas, and Ohio State is that the schedules. I mean, Phil Steele has Texas with the hardest schedule in the country. And they're in the SEC, and I know there's been a lot of commentary recently about, you know, the difficulty of schedule and the SEC's blown up to a different level and raises it, what have you. But I mean, they still have a non-conference game against Ohio State in week two, you know, whereas Notre Dame doesn't play their first six opponents each had at least eight losses last year. So, I mean, to me, that's a significant differentiator for something like that. And I understand Texas is loaded. Ohio State's loaded even when they're not, or you don't think that they are, but they are. And yeah, I think Notre Dame, those odds, that percentage, I think is greater for Notre Dame simply because of the schedule. Now it's winning national title. It's just not regular season, but that was the first thing that struck me. It's like Notre Dame is, I think, Phil Steele has Notre Dame 66th in most difficult schedule. And I pointed this out, and I think a few of our readers have as well. Miami is 61st, but you don't hear a lot about Miami's schedule being easy, but you hear a lot about it, I wonder, with regard to Notre Dame.
I think that's going to be the case all year. I brought it up on the Connell show with Danny Connell. I mean, he's no Miami fan, so he was in agreement. I said, you know, if you look at Miami's schedule, it's Notre Dame's schedule, but they play Clemson instead of at BYU. They're at Clemson, Notre Dame's at BYU. Those are the schedules right there. Hot take, Notre Dame and Miami should have been in the playoffs last year together. They will be this year together because of those schedules, because one's going to have one loss and the other might have none. Maybe both will have one.
Quickly on this too, I just want to add that the FPI has Notre Dame with the highest chance to win out in the regular season. That's 32.7%, which is pretty absurd considering they have, you know, 12 games to win out to go undefeated is quite high for any team. And the next highest is Texas Tech, which I have to assume that's
they missed BYU.
Done before Sorby, 25.2, and then it's 10.9. So Notre Dame's chance of winning out, according to this, is pretty significant.
So Miami right there, just not winning out because they have to play at Notre Dame?
Yeah, there's just 8.8%. They were sixth overall. So the gap between where Notre Dame is and chances to win out in their schedule versus everyone else is pretty significant in the FPI.
Not to get in the weeds, but since we're no fan of SEC schedule talk, I really think Ohio State and USC have harder schedules than a lot of the SEC. Like, Ohio State's going to Texas, okay? Ohio State's going to USC. Now, you could say USC has a harder schedule than Ohio State because USC has to play Ohio State, and Ohio State's better than USC. That's how these schedule things work. Like, it's harder for USC to play Ohio State than it is Ohio State to play USC. But Ohio State has at Indiana, they have Michigan, they're at USC, they're going to Texas. They're even at Iowa, which is, if you're at Iowa, it's hard. If you're home against Iowa, if you're Ohio State, it's not hard. Like, there's things to look at that, hey, Ohio State, 10-2, they're in.
Yeah.
And then they're dangerous.
Yeah, pretty much every year. Hey, just to complete the circle here, because sometimes we talk inside jokes and not everybody gets them. We were talking about Jalen Smith.
Yes.
Brian Van Gorder decided that he shouldn't pass rush Jalen Smith, just to clarify.
The oddest thing about that is that he did in the opener against Texas, and he got a sack, and it was the coolest play of the game. And you're like, oh, this is going to be fun. And then he just didn't do it anymore. I don't understand it. It's not like he came in and looked at something and thought it was – you had evidence on the field. And he's fast, so if you could just kind of watch football and see the guy run, you'd think maybe that guy would be good to blitz the quarterback. He did blitz our buddy Joe Schmidt a lot, though. I think I'd have chosen Jalen, no offense to Joe. Tim Priester's first-rate series has hit the end of the position groups. We will be hitting special teams, Tim, and also coaching coming up. Yeah, special teams is a position group, of course, but the ones people know to talk about right now, and no surprise, Notre Dame's defensive backs rank first. No surprise, Miami's defensive backs ranked second.
Yeah, I think last week I talked about linebackers and how many good linebackers there were on Notre Dame's schedule. You get into the DBs, and again, it's the haves and the haves not. It's Notre Dame. It's Miami. It's BYU and it's SMU. Those are, to me, the clear number four. I guess I'm not picking, like, I have Notre Dame number one, and I said some good things about Miami at number two. I guess I'm not picking Notre Dame number one by enough.
There's only a one-way gap between one and two. It's not like the FPI.
right. But, you know, I mean, they do. Miami, Bryce Fitzgerald, as a true freshman, had six picks last year. So they have good players, too. I don't think their corners take the football away like Notre Dame's do, certainly led by Leonard Moore and even Christian Gray. So I think that's one differentiator. And, I, you know, Jacoby Thomas? Is that who?
Yes, Jacoby Thomas.
Thank you. That was the biggest loss between the two secondaries from Miami, whereas Notre Dame was, you know, Devontae Smith, but he was hurt a good portion of the time. Jalen Strowman blocked a kick, I think, against Syracuse, a punt.
He had a great game against Syracuse, but that was a great game.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, at Notre Dame, I have Notre Dame 1 and Miami number 2 because I think Notre Dame's a little bit deeper. There are players there. I think Poyser, their other safety is Poyser and Fitzgerald. That's a really, really good safety tandem. Well, Notre Dame has a really, really good safety tandem too. I think it's close, but I think Notre Dame is better than Miami. And then Satuola, the safety for BYU, I really like that kid. And SMU has a couple safeties that they lost a couple safeties, but they brought in some players. But there's a big gap between that front four and I think the rest of the group. And again,
There is throughout.
Yeah. And as we, and, you know, now I am through the positions. I'm going into special teams. And guess what? Who do you think's it looks like the numbers say Notre Dame at the top.
The addition of Porath is huge there.
No, there's no doubt. Yeah. I mean, you can sit and bemoan 5 of 9 on field goals last year, but that's over with, or it should be.
Yeah, it's completely.
So, you know, you look at last year's stuff and then you project this year, but I think Notre Dame's going to probably end up at the top of that heap as well.
I am curious with Miami losing Keonti Scott too. I think we talk a lot about what they lost in the defensive end, and maybe he's not the best in coverage, even though he did have a pick against Ohio State, but just what he did at quarterback and like the run and just creating havoc is kind of incredible for what they have to replace. He had 13 tackles for loss and 5 sacks at quarterback last year. Like, that's kind of crazy. So I am curious, like, what Miami does replacing a dynamic piece like that, even if he wasn't perfect. But that'll be really interesting to see what they do that. Cause they'll be better in coverage even, but that piece is pretty special.
We have a related question before we get to questions in segment 2 from MJB in CA. Prior to last season, O'Malley attempted to warn us on multiple occasions the loss of Mills and Cross would be felt more than fans were acknowledging. It proved true. In this week's Thursday Thoughts, Tim Priester floated the notion that the loss of Mickens could have a noticeable impact. Is this Priester's way of warning us the secondary may not be not as good as expected, which in most of our minds is the top secondary in college football?
It's not that. It's Priester's way of giving you information that you shouldn't forget, that Mike Mickens is one of the great assistant coaches in the history of the program, certainly the modern era, and he's not there anymore. So how does it, you know, Aaron Henry, how does it translate? Does he communicate as well? You know, that was always a great thing about, I mean, you didn't see, we always talk about finger pointing and in North Carolina, their DBs finger pointing when Notre Dame was torching them. You didn't see that with that secondary under Mickens. And you didn't see, you know, they always knew what to do, where they should be aligned. You didn't see confusion. I think there was a
USC. They were confused against USC.
Well, yeah, okay. All right. You're right. I should not, never say never. Yeah. That's a good example of that. But there was a lot of unspoken communication that went on during games that was fostered during the week. And I think that was Mike Mickens. So no, I'm not saying Aaron Henry's going to do a poor job or there's going to be a drop off. I'm just reminding you that Mike Mickens, who was brilliant, is not there. And so, you know, I mean, nothing, there's never you never transition from one coach to another and it's exactly the same. You're going to teach differently. You're going to communicate differently. The players are going to respond to you differently. So just making you aware that Mike Mickens is really great.
Yeah, I think it's even possible with Aaron Henry that maybe some of the communication issues are a little smoother earlier on, just because he has a lot more familiarity with Chris Ash. He's probably maybe less like more. It's easier for him to maybe listen and take some of those feedback, where Mike Mickens was obviously so established when that's in that secondary too. I think if there are potential issues there, those are probably things we're going to see down the road, maybe in 2027 when it comes to development. Obviously, Henry has developed guys like Devin Witherspoon and things like that. But we just saw what Mike Mickens did over a long period of time. We knew what he could do at Notre Dame with these players. So I think that will be more with monitoring, but so many of these guys are coming back. They're already developed. I mean, Leonard Moore is going to be great regardless of who's coaching him. If we're being honest, there's Tay Johnson, a lot of those guys. So maybe down the road, we'll really see more of what it's like without Mike Mickens. But right now, this is still a room he put together.
I like to piggyback Priester's point by look. Chris Ash is known for defensive back coaching. Aaron Henry, obviously defensive back coach that has been decorated, was decorated 2 years ago for his efforts. No one in the world would have said, do you want to keep Mike Mickens or let Mike Mickens go to Baltimore and choose? I think Mike Mickens should just go to Baltimore. That's just the way it works. There's no way, but that's the way major college sports works with good coaches. They leave. It's kind of like when Kirby Smart left Alabama, no one thought every guy they got after that, you'd say, do you want Kirby Smart back? Yes, but they still get good coaches. They'll do a good job, and great point by Drew. I mean, if you don't make this secondary good, you're the problem. This secondary should be good, or it's a coaching problem.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, Drew. That's an excellent point. But there's still decisions to be made and adjustments to be made in game that Mickens won't be there to make. And I'm not saying Aaron Henry can't make it. You're right, Devin Weatherspoon. I mean, that guy had, when he came out of high school, he had no business being the number five overall pick. And Aaron Henry developed him. So this is not an indictment on him. It's just the reality that Mickens isn't there anymore.
We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Maltese Irish. Can you please elaborate on the, quote, mixed reviews, as Tom Zwiller wrote in the Counting Down the Irish rumblings about McKinney that seem to be a little concerning? That's DJ McKinney, cornerback transfer, Drew Mentok.
Yeah, I think just that he's been getting beat over the summer and whatever types of practice or one-on-one drills they're doing. So obviously you would like a fifth or sixth year player to come in and kind of hit the ground running. But I also think it's worth noting, for instance, in the field scenarios, like he's going against Jordan Faison lights up even Notre Dame's other cornerbacks sometimes too. And he also hasn't played much football since last season. You know, he stayed at Colorado to get his degree. He's not going to be practicing Colorado, and he's at Colorado. He's not on the team anymore. So not that he wasn't doing drills, but this might be the first live, you know, kind of defending somebody who's actually getting thrown the football he's gone through in some time. So might be shaking off some rust. This is definitely something though to monitor as we get into fall camp. Obviously, the later we get, the more significant it gets, but there are reasons why he might be struggling. Again, it's just been a while since he's done this potentially.
Also, it's kind of like, I feel this way about summer rumblings, and I realize they are the lifeblood of late June, early July on Notre Dame message boards, because it's all people really want to hear. And they really want to hear about the new guys. So depending on who you ask, someone watching can say DJ McKinney looks great because he watched two reps closely where DJ McKinney made plays. And somebody else can say DJ McKinney has been getting beat like a drum because he sees a few reps where one time each day, DJ McKinney covering a whole field in one-on-one drills is getting beaten by somebody. So you got to take it with a grain of salt, the summer updates. This is not any of our trio on this podcast. The information we've heard it from Irish Illustrated sources. I just ascribe a lot of it to the people that are watching it. I bet you DJ McKinney's had great moments and DJ McKinney's had rough moments. And I think that's usually the way for people in coverage if you're not named Leonard Moore. I just think there's moments where you don't look good in coverage in these drills, Tim. Sometimes I feel like we do those practice reports of the one-on-ones. People don't realize they're one-on-ones. And it's like, guys keep getting open. He's like, well, you guys wrote Javon McKinley was getting open. Why hasn't he played in 4 years? He's like, it's because he should get open. You're supposed to get open. Right. So I think it's take it with a grain of salt, and really excited to hear about McKinney around mid-August.
It's like anything else. It's Notre Dame versus Notre Dame, and somebody has to win and somebody has to lose. And there are some numbers out there. Drew, I think you've quoted these, that, or maybe it was you, Tim. I don't know. McKinney against zone in zone coverage. Does that ring a bell to you about some of the issues that he had?
Mine is McKinney and Gray and man coverage are identical, except Gray has grabby hands and can't stop getting penalties.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything both you guys are saying. It just takes one comment that filters our way. And like always, we need to see it before we believe it. Look, DJ McKinney wouldn't be in Notre Dame if he wasn't accomplished cornerback. They wouldn't have made this move and then made the move with Christian Gray to nickel without having a lot of confidence in McKinney. We've seen what he looks like physically.
Yeah, you go get a nickel, right, Tim? You just go get a nickel in the offseason.
Well, like speaking of comparing secondaries like Miami did, they went out and got the nickel from Boston College, who had an excellent year last year. And Notre Dame doesn't, you know, they don't have that proven guy at that position, which is why, I said it was a little bit closer maybe than some realized. But I don't think anybody should overreact to any of this news. Let's see what he looks like when camp opens. And I'm sure that he's going to, you know, again, physically he looks so great. We've seen some shots of him this summer And I think what Drew said has a lot to do with it. He just hasn't been getting a lot of live, you know, open field snaps since November of last year.
It's also why when you see a guy like Mukum, who you're hopeful for, who looks physically great, it's different than when you see Francis Brew, who looks physically great, that had 12 and a half tackles for loss. It's just
he's got a track record. You know,
track records, when he looks great, you're like, oh my God, that guy's going to be awesome. When it's Mukum, you're like, oh, shouldn't he be good? That could work out. So it's there's a lot that goes into this. It's never one guy saw something in the summer and that guy's going to be great. Plus, no one ever reports Leonard Moore looks great. So these guys can't tell what they're
and
he looked good.
Then we would be remiss if we didn't bring it up. I felt I would have been remiss if I don't remind you. Remember, Mike Mickens isn't here anymore.
Yeah. Our next question from Twitter, Chris Koziak, gentleman of culture. Tell me why Matty Augustine is starting week one in Lambeau Field. Also, is there another player who could leap up and steal a job? Tim, I'm not sure part two has anything to do with offensive line, but let's start with Matty Augustine and then move on to that.
Well, I think Joe Rudolph has proven that if he believes Matty Augustine outplays Sullivan Apture in the preseason, he'll win the job. We saw it happen with Pendleton a couple years ago. So I think that number one, but number two, I mean, Augustine's really good. He's very fundamentally sound. He's got great size. He keeps his center of gravity, keeps his lower half underneath his upper half. He doesn't lunge a lot. These are all things that, we always look for with offensive linemen. He's an excellent, excellent prospect. I also think that Sullivan Apture played better than most people give him credit for. After the USC game, I thought he was lacking a little bit that day, probably a little bit, tentative. But
Trout's best day.
Yeah, it was. It was in the making. It was. So Augustine's a really good prospect. Apture could hold him off, but if he can't, it's because Augustine is really playing well, and Rudolph doesn't hesitate to put a younger guy in.
Yeah, I think that the Sam Pendleton point is a really good one. He put in a sophomore over a bunch of, seniors who were objectively the leaders on the offensive line, too. So if he's willing to do that, he's going to be willing to side with Matty Augustine potentially, especially even if it's close. Like, going with a younger guy, I think, has potential because you're developing him more for the future, too, which I think has its benefits. I also think Apture has had some back issues, so if he's a little hobbled or has to take some time off in fall camp for that reason, if that flares up at all, that would really give Matty Augustine a lot of chances to get in there, and maybe Apture they would view as like a better option as a backup guard going into the season for that reason or something like that too. So if it happens, I think that would be a potential.
And Tim, if I could throw, it was your comment. I did the Ashton Craig number 21 in the counting down, and you suggested that perhaps he could move to guard if Oding's playing well in the preseason and whenever he's ready to come back.
I mean, what if Craig's best time to come back, just for everything that gets involved in a recovery, is week three and Joe Oding's been fantastic for Notre Dame's new offensive line? Ashton Craig could win the right guard job. They're not just, and it really comes into play if Craig is delayed. If for some reason Craig's come back in week five and they've set, and all of a sudden you've had an offensive line absolutely humming with Joe Oding at center, Craig's an option there too. So that might go to the, could somebody else jump up and win a job? I mean, you could keep Joe Oding.
And I think Craig too, this is his second straight year with an ACL injury that he's coming off. Like, why don't force him back either too? Like, I feel like maybe he will be ready, but why, if you have somebody you're confident in Oding, I think it might make sense to let him delay and then potentially, like you just said, try him out at guard if that's an area that's a little bit weaker.
I think I was the only one sitting with Craig I think it was April, second week of April. And, yeah, I'm pretty gullible when it comes to guys talking about their injuries. And he's like, I'm way ahead of where I was, coming off the first one. So can you believe that? I don't know. Again, that was April. So, I mean, things have changed dramatically. Right. So, maybe he'll be ready sooner rather than later. But the options are all open, and I give Joe Rudolph credit for keeping those options open on the offensive line.
I cannot offer a prediction yet on Tangwell versus Apture. Excuse me, Tangwell. I'm about to say Landon Tangwell. On Matty Augustine versus Apture, but if people want to study Notre Dame's offensive line, go to YouTube and Landon Tangwell's YouTube channel. He likes Notre Dame's offensive line more than all of us combined, more than if you had Harry Heastand and Joe Rudolph in a room together. Landon Tangwell loves Notre Dame's offensive line. He says they are a true 10 deep. And he loves himself some Matty Augustine, if you want to jump in and watch him.
I haven't read a ton or listened to or watched a ton of his stuff, but he does seem like the biggest Notre Dame fan for somebody who picked Penn State. Like he does, he talks about CJ Carr a lot. Like he does seem very high. And I'm not saying it's not genuine, but it is very interesting.
No,
I think he acknowledged that it was because of Brian Kelly too. So maybe that helps endear him to Notre Dame fans too. But he's an interesting guy.
You have to admire his enthusiasm for doing the job. There's no doubt about that. But job. If he keeps doing Notre Dame guys, he's going to put me out of the film review business here because,
offensive line reviews are pretty good.
His offensive line reviews are good. And I understand why people would put more stock in his comments than mine.
Our next question is from Brody Quinn. You guys have to rank and rate everything. Name something you annually tend to overrate, whether it be a player, team, situation, etc. And name something you tend to annually overlook/undervalue.
I'll start us off, but mine, I've gotten away from this one. I used to overrate any decent Navy team going into game week. And I've just started looking back. When Notre Dame's good, which they are, under Marcus Freeman and normally under Brian Kelly, that's not a problem. Like, they rose up and got Marcus Freeman's and Al Golden in year one, 2022, with a crazy passing attack you didn't expect. It's been it since 2017. Like, no good Notre Dame teams hammer Navy, even if you're a good Navy team. I just think it's fun to root for Navy when they play other teams, and it's really cool if they're undefeated when they play Notre Dame because it helps that game situation and get some eyeballs on the TV for Notre Dame. But I tend to overrate Navy and what they could possibly do to Notre Dame because we live through the pain of some crap losses where Navy was better than Notre Dame too. They was literally better.
They were better. They were better. I mean, Navy's not as good as they were last year. They can't possibly be.
And I don't mean to make it all Navy. I just mean, I tend to go like a good Navy team. I'm like, oh, that's a problem. You know,
but I mean, just to echo what you're saying, I mean, you know, you lose your quarterback, you lose a draft choice. You know, Heidenreich, who I love. Remember I told you how much I loved him? He got drafted.
That's your guy.
You know, I mean, he's a really, really good athlete. But mine is, you know, like, oh, they got a great offensive line coming back. Why does it always seem like it's just regardless? It just takes a couple weeks before they find their actual footing. Maybe that's more under Joe Rudolph than previous. I don't know. But it seems to me that, and then especially with, you know, a couple guys changing positions. But Tangwell's correct. I mean, they are, I don't know, about 10 deep. You know, their starting lineup's going to be very good, and they're going to have a handful of guys that can come off the bench that can be very good as well. But I always tend to overestimate an offensive line early in the season before they actually have gotten their footing and their chemistry together.
I think it's easier or harder to predict both ways. Sometimes the transfers coming in, and I feel like Gervonta Jean-Baptiste wouldn't have thought was going to be that good this time when he was coming in, you know, even over the summer after what you saw in the spring. But also I was really high on, you know, RG Oben, Chris Mitchell, guys like that. Like, I thought they would probably translate better based on their past production at Duke and Florida International. So I think sometimes it's just hard to see how they're going to assimilate, or even if you see one or two good practices, like, that might be a little bit easy to like overrate just because they're, oh, well, Chris Mitchell had 1,000 yards last year or whatever. So I think that's something that can be a little bit difficult. And I guess we also overlook sometimes group of five teams in September at home too.
Yeah. Underrate for Notre Dame or undervalue. Maybe it doesn't have to be for Notre Dame. I think I undervalue the arduous travel Notre Dame goes through. Like, I was looking at one of the questions was, name the game that's not situated well in the schedule. It's always that last game where Notre Dame has been traveling back. It's not as bad this year with Purdue at home and Wisconsin, but sometimes they're just all over the country. And by the end of it, it just looks like they have dead legs. No matter what they have out there, they don't always play great at Stanford. They're way better than Stanford, you know, and they USC, they've been so much better than USC, and they've been in dogfights trying to get to the college football playoff. I think I underestimate that because it's an excuse. It sounds like an excuse, but I think maybe it's just a reason you have dead legs at the end of the year. Is Notre Dame has a lot of travel and not playing in a conference. This year, not too bad with Purdue and Wisconsin.
Question number four from ND Twitter 25. I know Tim Priester hates these questions, so I'm hoping you'll include it. What two players from each recent Notre Dame playoff team would you bring to this roster to guarantee a national championship appearance? Choose two each from 2018, 2020, 2024, respectively.
Go ahead, Drew.
For 2018, I went with Miles Boykin. I mean, I think filling in that boundary receiver. He's really good that year, would be the obvious choice. And this isn't necessarily a position of need, but Julian Okwara, just the pressures he generated that season, I think that would be really hard to give up.
For 18, I went Tillery and Okwara. I'm just going to pile on the defensive line and play. Now you can make Jason Onyeka and Teyon Gray fewer snaps for Jerry Tillery. It's fine. It's fine with me. And then there is a Traore Okwara thing on third down. I was just planning on no one scoring during the year, and then it doesn't matter who plays the boundary.
It's a good thing to have. I did write Miles Boykin down, but I wrote Chase Claypool down first. I mean, what a warrior, what a guy that, you know, led by his example and physicality on the field. Wouldn't you like to have a Dexter Williams coming out of the backfield
too? Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that would be a nice one.
That name came to mind when I was thinking about the first year given there.
2020, Drew?
I had Michael Mayer. I mean, I think that addresses a need, and I know he's still a freshman that year, but he was just really good. And I went with shoring up the offensive line and grabbing Liam Eichenberg.
I'm starting a Kyle Hamilton at nickel. No apologies to all the people, bro. I don't want to play nickel for Notre Dame this year. I'm going to start Kyle Hamilton at nickel, and I'm adding Kyron Williams to the backfield. And E.S. Williams can back up Kyron Williams all he wants. It's not happy camp, Tim Priester.
No, I did write his name down, too. I thought that was kind of too easy, so I didn't I didn't say it. A leader like Robert Hainsey on the offensive line as we move forward a little bit, whether it's Michael Mayer or Mitch Evans, a tight end, they could use a, you know, real alpha at that position as they go into the season. I'll let you guys chime in again.
2024, Love and Watts, because I'm going to take the best safety Notre Dame has had on the field in maybe 50 years in college. And Jeremiah Love, because once again, should Jeremiah Love count here? That's not even an option to bring someone back. No one doesn't say Jeremiah Love, so.
I wrote down Price because I thought it was unfair to write Love down.
Yeah, I have Love as well. I think that's, I mean, he was so good, especially before he got hurt. And then, I mean, Riley Mills is, you know, taking out the injury, like just adding that pass rushing up the middle, I think would be huge for this team.
Moving back again a little bit, you know, I mean, hell, it'd be nice to have Nick McLeod on this roster at cornerback too. You knew the consistency of him at the position. And then Jordan Clark did a nice job at nickel when he had his 1 year at Notre Dame.
I considered Jordan Clark, and that's why I just went with Xavier Watts, because I feel like if I just put Xavier Watts on the football field,
that's
with
fair.
Johnson and Shuler and Leonard Moore and whoever else, and maybe Drew, everything would be fine if I have Xavier Watts running around out there. He covered up a lot of things. He was the other human eraser, Priester. Remember we named Jalen Smith the human eraser before?
Yeah, no doubt. Incredible. The heights that he reached at that position after – you know, spinning his wheels at wide receiver. Unbelievable.
Next question from Jackson Pollock. Is Notre Dame's recruiting effort at linebacker enough to date? Will they hit the portal? Will there be flips? Are they actually just looking for someone else?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Notre Dame sees this as enough in the last 2 years, particularly this class. I think Notre Dame always, based on what I've heard, wanted two linebackers in this class, having Irvin decommit, kind of, you know, screwed with the board, I think, a little bit there. But I think they're definitely going to be looking to try and flip some of the other targets they were in on this spring and see what they get done. So I don't think they're done trying to look into that. So
I would agree with you, Drew. I will say it depends on who comes back, but they can't wait till that decision's made. They have to continue to pursue other linebackers. You know, if KV and Osbury come back, then you're probably in good shape. We know that Foremo would be back again for his third year. And then you go into Ko Keo and Teddy Rizek. I don't know about Clapper yet. He was hurt. We didn't really get a chance to see him, but I think Drew, you said the same thing, Thomas Davis. I think there were times in the spring where it's like, okay, that looks like a quick, sudden, you know, confident, aggressive linebacker. But you know, one in this class after the two that you got last year, no, that's not enough. And you can't say, oh, well, we hope that so-and-so comes back. So-and-so comes back. You have to continue to rebuild the roster. And that's what the recruiting staff is for. It's a year round gig these days.
You have to assume they all leave. Bowen can come back for a fifth under the new rule. Jaden Osbury under any rule can come back for a fifth. KVA could come back for a senior year. You have sneak.
No, I mean,
got to assume they leave. Even Osbury. Well, if you're a great Notre Dame team and Osbury has a great year, he should go too.
But it's probably more likely Osbury comes back because he hasn't had as many reps as Bowen has, and he can be front and center stage linebacker.
He would make a lot of money at Notre Dame. He would have a day three
contract
in the NFL.
Right. Pay him as opposed to, you know, a transfer, which we've talked about where they, you know, might have to head next year.
I also think, too, this is the type of thing they're going to have a much better idea of, too, in August or October. Like, they're going to see where Osbury is playing the role he has back where, you know, is KVA come back and looking great, you know, earlier than we think he is. So, while they definitely need to be proactive in thinking about this, I think these are the type of things that they're going to have a good idea about mid-season and going into November. And as we've seen, too, under Mark Schreeman, he wants his coaches having those conversations throughout the season, too. It's not, let's wait until the end of November and find out what we need. Now, maybe they may not have, like, a clear-cut decision for a guy like KVA, but they're going to at least have an idea of where their heads are at.
And I don't think you go into – I mean, he is a nice developmental story right now in Davis, maybe, but you're playing for championships if you're Notre Dame right now. Yeah. So they can be better in 2028 as they develop at Notre Dame if you have to get somebody else. I do think they'll flip someone. I think that's probably the most likely thing. Because as Tim said, you got to keep the recruiting going. And linebacker is the one spot where it's tailed off a little bit.
Our next question is from Irish Flyer 96. Who leads the Irish in receptions from the distances below? 0 to 10 yards, 10 to 30 yards, 30 plus yards.
I have a definitive for 0 to 10 yards. Aeneas Williams.
Understood. Understood. The next one's a little bit more challenging, I think. 10 to 30. I think that's a battle. I do too,
but I say Faison because he just gets more catches.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, can I say Faison for all three? Like, I think even the short yardage, sure I think just what we saw, what he does after the catch, and if the run game struggles at all, I think that will be a major utility for him this season. And I think we saw him, especially in practice, like he had some really nice moves to get deep this year. And I think that is going to be one of CJ Carr's nice weapons. And I think CJ Carr throws a deep ball too, that will be a big part of it. But I kind of think the more I think about it, and obviously I'm on the Jordan Faison bandwagon, but I think he's just going to have a big year this fall.
I think if it was 0 to 15, I'd be a little bit inclined to pick Faison for that length. And then if it was 15 to 30, I would say Mylon Graham. But again, we don't...
You know, the other guy I'm thinking of is Mylon.
Yeah, I mean, and for 30-plus, I mean, Quincy Porter. That's what boundaries are supposed to do. They're supposed to stretch the back end of the defense. And... you know, 6'4", 210 or whatever he is, if healthy and ready to roll, I think he's got a chance to be that guy. That's what a boundary receiver is supposed to do.
I will say, I'll make a bet that nobody appears on this other than the three guys I said. I'm not saying that they're all going to be correct, but Aeneas Williams, Jordan Williams, Faison, Mylon Graham are the only guys that ended up doing this. And it could be Faison all three, like Drew said. It will not be Aeneas Williams all three. That would be the greatest running back season in the history of the world.
Premier could... maybe sneak into one of those first two categories.
It's more fun if it's other people. I'm just saying what I think will happen. Quincy Porter, Ian Premer, and Jordan Faison is the most fun answer. I just don't know if that'll happen.
Question number 7 from Balance by Bob. Pick 3 Indy opponents for each of these categories, and you can't pick Miami, SMU, and BYU. The first category is semi-competitive game versus Notre Dame.
Go ahead, Drew.
I think my answer is Syracuse, just given, as you mentioned earlier, just like the end of the year, there's a Stephen Jelly factor. It could be a lot of pressure if that's for an undefeated season. It just feels, and it's on the road, like that feels like the type of game. And potentially Norton's fourth best opponent, too, depending on how things shake out. So I'm going that game.
I'm saying Syracuse for the same reason. Boston College for the sandwich in November between Miami and SMU. Because you just can't be up for Boston College the same way you can't be up for Miami and SMU. It's human nature. I was going to say Navy after all that conversation. I won't say Navy. I'm not allowed to say Navy. All right, I'm going to go with Stanford for Tim Priester's comment that Stanford is going to be a little bit better on defense than everybody is getting credit for. Yeah. This is not. I'm talking a 17 to 20 point win. I don't mean.
Yeah,
not 49 to nothing like the last time they were here.
I think I talk about Colton Joseph, the Wisconsin quarterback, every podcast now since I rated him too low initially, but I really like him. I've watched more of him, and he is a true run pass threat. So I think that he can make it a semi-competitive game in the opener. Again, tying in with what I said about offensive lines, that Notre Dame's offensive line won't quite be there. And Wisconsin's got some assets on the defensive side of the ball. And I'm just throwing this out. Second year at North Carolina, Bill Belichick is the head coach. I mean, I got to believe that North Carolina is a lot more competitive than they were, last season or at the beginning of the year. I don't know that they have the horses to do that, but on the road, do we have a kickoff time for that? We don't. Could be an early kickoff game, and maybe Notre Dame starts out a little bit slowly there. These things happen. As we sit here, it's like North Carolina stinks. Well, I get that. But Boston College stinks, and Notre Dame barely beat them last year. So
yeah. Boston College has a nice malaise with them when they play Notre Dame. They bring along for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can see that to your point about North Carolina. Like, that's, a month into the season. Like, maybe they're just kind of getting a little overconfident or something like that going on the road. And I mean, I know Bill Belichick struggled last year, but he still is one of the greatest coaches of all time. So there's potential there. But I think some of the difficulty with answering a question like that is the first month of the season, they should have beat everybody by 20. So we're just kind of picking a game that maybe something could happen.
Yeah. At North Carolina, they have some components defensively. Aboujadeh, their defensive end, is really sensational, although he kind of beefed up his stats in one or two games, but he's a handful. That's why I bring that up. And I mean, I got to believe that Belichick's offense is going to end up being better than it was last year.
I put them in the Red Purdue category. I think you can put seven teams in Red Purdue.
Yeah.
I just think Notre Dame might go to North Carolina focused and go out and just blow their doors off.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see Michigan State in week three rising up, because if it was week two, maybe, but Rice is so bad in week two, it can't happen again.
Rice is definitely my red Purdue here.
Yeah. There could be a lot of, a lot of easy, but not epic victories around this.
Syracuse on the road in game 12, Notre Dame's 11-0. They're going to Syracuse.
That just makes it harder. They'll probably move it to something stupid like Friday, so everybody has to suffer, even though they're able to fight it. How the Syracuse always gets Clemson on a Friday night and upsets them or takes them to the wire?
Notre Dame's not moving no damn football game
not.
Friday
no,
night.
No, it's because they have the money machine that Dabo doesn't have. He has to move
that's
it Friday.
Right.
Our next question from 5-star Freeman. I assume that's not Jack or Matt, but Marcus. Timely question. What is your favorite All-Star game memory? Go ahead, Tim.
I don't have a specific game, but for me, growing up as a kid, and now we're talking about, Mays and Bench and Rose and Aaron and Clemente and Morgan and Schmidt. And those are the glory days of being a baseball fan in the 70s. And then you get into the 80s a little bit, but I don't have it. Reggie Jackson, Tom Seaver. It's ridiculous how many Hall of Famers played when I was a kid growing up. No wonder I gravitated to the sport watching it. But no specific game that I can think of, but all of those guys are very specific.
Yeah, I don't have a strong memory. I remember some of the home run derbies before we were, certain everybody was taking steroids were pretty exciting.
Home run derby? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, those are great. But I feel like the clip I see the most and kind of epitomize the person is Pete Rose, and I think it was like the 71 All-Star game where he took out the catcher who was his friend to score the game-winning run, which I think, he shows his competitiveness and his disregard for other people at times too. So I thought that was interesting.
I'm not sure Ray Fosse ever made an All-Star team again after that. I could be wrong, but that was a devastating, devastating
game. One again, that's for sure. I would go the first night game at Wrigley Field, watch with all my friends at Paul Fisco's house. I think that was 1990 Wrigley Field. Yeah. Could have been 89. That was 90. It was 90, I think.
Was it?
Yep. 99, the first night All-Star game, not the first night game. They had an All-Star game at Wrigley Field under the lights.
Yeah.
And then easily Pedro striking out 5 out of 6 in 99 in Fenway Park. He struck out Larry Walker, Sosa, Maguire among those 5 out of 6 in a row. That was the greatest. And I remember thinking, this is stupid, but I was glad as an American League backer for the Red Sox in 2003, the first All-Star game that determined home field advantage.
For the World Series,
I remember thinking, this is really stupid. And then the Red Sox and Yankees were in a great battle in 2003 before goodness, 1-04. But I was really happy the American League won because they got, for no reason whatsoever, got to host the World Series.
That has got to be one of the dumbest. All the, like, for example, all the great rule changes they've made recently with the pitch clock. And I have no problem with a runner on second base to start the 10th inning. We don't need 18 inning games on April 28th.
You'd have a problem if you had to explain that to rec league players, though. What am I doing on second base? That's a fun.
Yeah, well, I get, I think that's a good rule. That the pitch clock was huge, but the host of the World Series based upon who wins the All-Star game, that's got to be the dumbest damn thing I've ever heard of.
That's fantastic. Very quickly, because this is a 3-part question from Five Star Freeman. One word, one country. Who won the World Cup, Drew?
France.
Tim.
I've got France playing England, so I'll take England.
Oh, I'll take France to break the tie here. England's not since 1966, right? That'd be fun.
Correct.
If you're an English fan or care. While I have your attention from Five Star Freeman, what is your column headline if Notre Dame loses to Wisconsin?
I have Fickle Mistress, Freeman's longtime mentor, extracts revenge.
That's pretty good. I thought I liked Mom. That's a really good one.
That's really good. I just stumbled upon this. It was from Chicago 5, their 5th album.
Okay.
When All the Laughter Dies in Sorrow.
Oh, all right, I feel terrible now. Mine was Pop-Tarts Bowl on line 1, September Swoon Continues for Freeman.
Yeah, that would be a swoon.
Yeah, that would be bad, but that'd be interesting. I just think Notre Dame's going to really handle Wisconsin, but we have a month and a half to talk about that. All right, final question. This came in late from our message board. Golden Dober 25. If Notre Dame is able to get Jadarian Price to come back for another season, how many points and point spreads per game would it have been worth to ND? He then says, what about Malachi Fields, and what about Eli Raritan? And before I chime in, you guys have thoughts on this?
Not as good as the thoughts that you have on it.
I did some research, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a specific, but I mean, I feel like Price and Fields alone, I mean, you could be talking about a touchdown a game almost with some of the teams they're playing. And it just fills, it brings in really good players at two positions of need, too, on the offense. So it's hard to not see those being significant.
Years ago, I was watching the NFL, and Aaron Rodgers was out of a game in his prime, not in his Pittsburgh years, but in his prime. The point spread moved 1 point. And I wondered about that. And someone said, can't move a point spread for real without a quarterback being out. I was like, that seems crazy to me. So this question, just for you, Golden Dover 25, I asked friend of the show, Tim Murray, who asked friend of the show, Brad Powers, both professional gamblers. Jadarian Price, 0.5 points. The other two combined, 0.5 points. All three back together, 1 point.
Wow.
On each point spread. However, that 1 point would have Notre Dame jump Ohio State as the number one ranked power ranking team. So even though they don't move the needle like we think it does, that actually makes a giant difference in your overall point spread. But just so you know, I've always known this just because when Aaron Rodgers was out and all of a sudden
it's the quarterback that. Yeah.
So that's not it. If you took CJ Carr out, I should probably ask one of these guys about CJ Carr, but I'm not going to ask that because I have CJ Carr.
And me having to,
you know, it's right, Jack Freeman.
Yeah, same. Me having to answer first just shows why I don't bet on sports.
Yeah, no, it's logical though. You think, oh, Jadarian Price, he solidifies the offense, right? There's no weakness all of a sudden. Malachi Fields with him. There's your boundary receiver, but that's that's interesting note on betting. That's why you should. Vegas has big buildings, and we contribute to them. Thanks for contributing to this podcast, guys. That was a lot of fun. We'll be back on a couple notes here. We'll be back on Thursday, July 16th. We will not have a Monday podcast next week because we are scheduled to talk. The media is scheduled to talk to Marcus Freeman Tuesday. We don't have a time, but Tim Priester and I will gather that day for a podcast. So no point in having a Monday podcast. We have Marcus Freeman Tuesday. We'll get Marcus Freeman and do a podcast right after that. And we'll be back with another Thursday podcast as well. And that should be fun. We've been waiting for the Freeman conversation. We wanted it back in May, like last year. It's actually much better now because it's not speculative. Go ahead,
yeah, Tim. but we could have used that information though to bridge the gap through the summer.
you want one May 31st and
but,
July?
Yeah, yeah, no, that. But okay, but we'll fine. Look,
let them know that we need.
Looking
that.
Forward to spending a little bit of time with Coach Freeman next week. Yep.
All right, for Drew Medtalk and Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.